Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I am here to help you break free of the diet trap and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs or anything. No more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever having to go on another diet. So I have some topics for today, but if you'd like to call in and talk to me about what's on your mind, why don't you go ahead and do so? The number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I'd love to talk with you. So last week, I talked about some reasons why people sabotage their weight loss efforts. I explored the fear of being impulsive, the fear of being objectified, and the fear of happiness. And I want to get back to the topic of sabotage because there are a couple more of these that are, I think, are really important. So one is fear of expectation. Now, Robert's story illustrates this really well. Robert spent much of the last 10 years thinking about going to grad school, dreaming about going to grad school. He wanted to apply, but the idea of the interview process filled him with a lot of anxiety. And so he found all these statistics, all these surveys that showed a bias against overweight people when it came to acceptance into grad school programs. He was convinced that his weight would prevent him from being accepted into a program. So he'd say, I'll apply after I lose weight. Then I'll be ready, he would say. So like Robert, many people have expectations of what's going to happen after they lose weight. And maybe you can relate to this too, especially if you say things along the line of, when I lose weight, I'll finally start dating. When I lose weight, I'll find a better job. When I lose weight, I'll have kids. I'll have kids when I lose weight. When I lose weight, I'll travel. So the inherent belief is once you lose weight, a new boyfriend, girlfriend, job, career will magically appear. Vacation. In other words, when you lose weight, your life will change. When you lose weight, you will change. In fact, there's often an expectation that your personality will change by losing weight. If you're insecure, you'll become confident after you lose weight. If you're shy, you'll become outgoing, life of the party. If you have no friends, you're going to be a social butterfly. But what if none of that happens? Oh, I have a caller. All right, hold on. My mouse is not working very well. Okay, there it goes. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. What's your name?
I go by Nick, but my real name is Lawrence.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good. I listened to the last two shows, and I really I enjoyed them. I usually don't call into shows, but something really hit home with me, and I wanted to bring it out. We're always talking about weight and how we're feeling about ourselves and so on. And for a long time, I get up in the morning. It's a habit, and I get on a scale. And whatever the scale says is how I'm going to feel during the day. It's a terrible, terrible feeling. I know I'm not alone, but it's something I just keep to myself. I don't talk to anybody about it, but I know it's foolish, and
It's not foolish.
It's not real.
It's not foolish, but it definitely sounds like it's causing you some pain. So what would happen if you didn't get on the scale? What is the fear of not weighing yourself? What are you going to miss?
You know, I just think that it'll be negative. I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about myself during the day. You know, it's just like that's a judgment that I have in the morning when it tells me how I'm going to feel. And I plans out my day with eating. If I weigh 2 pounds over, I can't go out to dinner with friends tonight because I'll be tempted, and that means I may be 2 pounds over tomorrow, and I won't feel good about myself.
Well, Nick, I'm so glad that you're calling because this is something that I think a lot of people can relate to, and who out there has not had the experience of getting up and being in a pretty good mood, and then you get on the scale, and boom, you see something you don't like, and then your day is shot. So I often tell people to go on a scale diet. You know, I tell people to stop weighing themselves, and I recommend getting rid of that scale because, like you said, if you start your day by having that scale dictate the kind of day you're going to have, it's got too much power over your life. I mean, that bathroom scale is not your friend. It does not know you. It cannot measure your value. And I say, don't let a piece of metal and plastic have so much control over your self-esteem. In fact, I have a video on my YouTube series called Smash the Scale, and I take a hammer to a scale and I completely destroy it. It was very satisfying and gratifying. Kind of funny, too. So you can always check that out.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying, Nick, which is that you're afraid that if you don't somehow have a measure of you, that you don't know how to feel about yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's my judge. That's telling me who I am, what I'm going to be for the day. It's taking up a lot of energy in me.
And when did the scale start dictating your life? How far back does this go?
Oh, God. It could be 10 years.
What was going on in your life 10 years ago?
Oh, probably a divorce. Yeah.
So
probably.
All right. So can we wonder that maybe some of the feelings about the divorce, was the divorce your idea or hers?
It was... It was my divorce. I wanted a divorce, but okay. It caused trouble. Yeah, with kids, and realizing what happened that all of a sudden I was alone, without the family, without the kids, and it was very difficult.
Well,
and then all of a sudden I was out there and not having anything. I felt I had to look good, and I was fat when I was a kid. That I had to look good, and I was judged by how you looked. You know, nobody wanted a fat kid, and you had to be thin.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that because you were overweight, or as you put it, fat as a kid, and there was a lot of shame attached to that, and you felt like you said nobody wanted a fat kid. That right. When you're getting on the scale, you seem to associate perhaps weight with unlikability. So if you're gaining weight, that means you're going to be that fat kid, that unlikable person. Does that resonate?
Absolutely. Nobody likes a fat kid.
Well, is that true? Did you have no friends?
No, of course it's not true.
What? Okay.
Of course it's not true.
All right. So, so that's your thought, though, that you could, if you keep yourself thinner, then people will like you.
Right. Exactly.
At a time that you're divorced and maybe you're out there meeting women.
Right. Out there alone and nobody likes fat kids, so I just... my weight was everything, and getting on a scale in the morning, and I was up a pound, 2 pounds, I wouldn't eat for the day because I'd have to be at a certain balance. and I do it now, and I'm not fat, but I still do it.
Well, because it sounds as if it's really not even about... No, don't be curious, not critical. Don't call yourself stupid or thought your thoughts stupid. When you say, oh, it sounds stupid, now where does that get you? You feel stupid, and then you feel bad, and then you're going to, you know, not eat or something. Who knows? But when you say, okay, huh, this is interesting. Why do I do that? Curious. Not critical, curious. When you say, well, then you see, when you're curious, you're more likely to answer your own question, right? So if we can wonder, what is it that you're achieving by this? It's some way of feeling likable, like you're reassuring yourself, oh, okay, there's some mental equation that goes fat equals or over a certain number equals unlikable. As long as I'm under that number, I'm okay, I'm still likable. And I got to make sure that I'm under that number, right? So we have to challenge the idea that your likability is actually tied to the number on the scale. Have you ever once said, I would like my friend so much better if she lost weight or if he lost weight?
No.
Right.
I never saw anything like that.
No, absurd. You'd never, because that's not why you like your friends. So I think we're hearing from the kid in you that's so scared of being seen and being viewed as unlikable that that's what's scaring you. Right. So you have to challenge the idea that what makes you a likable person is attached to your weight, or that being a certain weight makes you unlikable. Because when you were the fat kid, as you put it, did you have friends?
Yeah, I had friends. Yeah, I always likable. People thought I was funny and this and that, and I was always had friends. Yeah.
Yes.
I was a good guy.
Yeah, and sounds like you still are.
I am. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Nina.
Thank you, Nick. I think you raise an important question, and I urge you to continue to challenge the idea of what makes you likable or not. You know, what makes a person likable and interesting is their heart, you know, the way they think, the way they feel, the way they treat other people. You know, I think Maya Angelou said this. It's a great quote. She said something like, people will not remember what you said, they will remember how you made them feel. And that has nothing... Isn't that great?
That's very true.
Yeah. So... Wow. So.
Listen, I love your show.
Thanks, Nick. Keep listening and feel free to call back. Keep us posted.
I will. I definitely will. Okay. I'll send you my scale so you can do it against the wall or something.
Or how about you smash it and send me a video? I'll post it.
Thank you.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Oh. Okay. So I think that a lot of you can probably relate to Nick, and I hope that I've given you something to think about as far as what makes you someone that people want to be around. And it goes very much into, you know, the topic of sabotage, as I was talking about Robert and this idea that changing your weight can change what happens to you in the world. And what if it doesn't? What if nothing happens? What if everything in your life stays exactly the same except for the number on the scale? So Robert and I discussed this, and we explored what would happen if he lost weight and did not get into graduate school. And he realized that if that happened, if he lost weight, applied, and didn't get in, then he could not blame his weight, and he would have to face the fact that he could not control the world by losing weight. I've had many people say to me things like, oh, my boyfriend broke up with me, but I'm going to lose 20 pounds and get him back, as if that's the thing that the guy is interested in. It just, it really objectifies you. It diminishes the relationship and everything. But it's this idea that change your body, change your life. So, okay, back to Robert. So the more that we talked about it, Robert began to recognize that he had other anxieties besides getting in and his weight and all that. He was worried about being able to keep up in school. He was worried about not being smart enough, not being as bright or as capable as other people thought he was. So the truth is, Robert felt like an imposter. He told himself, and he told me, that grad school was a possibility and he would do all these things after he lost weight. But secretly, he felt inadequate about his intelligence and his abilities. And when he addressed these core issues and these anxieties, he was able to lose weight without dieting. And although he did not get into his first choice of grad school, he managed his disappointment about that and kept applying and felt good about the program that did finally accept him. So basically, you cannot resolve a psychological conflict or anxiety by changing your body. You're going to feel good about your weight loss. Yeah, that feels good. You know, you feel good, you feel lighter, you can buy clothes and not worry about how they fit. But you will not suddenly become a different person. You will be yourself, just thinner. So here's some food for thought. Here's some things for you to think about. What qualities about yourself, not physical, not your weight, nothing to do with your body self. What qualities about yourself do you think you need to change or get rid of? And how did you come to believe those qualities were unacceptable? And what do you imagine will be different if you were at a different weight? So if you have a question or a comment on this, talk to me. The number is 818-602-4929. Okay. The last reason for sabotaging your weight loss efforts is fear of failure. So check out the difference between, let's call them Paul and Paulette. I'm not feeling very creative this morning. So Paul and Paulette both applied for a new position at a big corporation. Let's call it the Tyrell Corporation. And for all you movie buffs out there, here's a quiz. What movie features the Tyrell Corporation? Okay, so Paul and Paulette applied for a job. Neither of them got the job. Paulette said, "I'm so bummed I didn't get the job. Hopefully I'll get the next one." And she went on with her life, putting in new applications. Paul said, "I didn't get the job. That means I'm a total failure. I'm such a loser. I completely suck." Paul labeled himself a loser and a failure, which made him feel worse. And then he used food for comfort because he had little vocabulary or means to make himself feel better with words. He was using words to beat himself up. He did not have the words to build himself up. So fear of failure relates to this kind of pervasive sense of shame about the self, and it usually has to do with our identity. So keep in mind, there is a difference, a really big difference between failing and being a failure. Failing has to do with what you're doing or not doing. Being a failure has to do with you as a person and has to do with your identity. So when you define failure as going beyond just the fact of failing to achieve a goal, and when failure takes on the meaning of being a failure as a person, that can feel unbearable. So rather than face that, it can be easier to sort of not put much effort into losing weight or not really take care of your health or get close to feeling good about yourself, but then not really meeting your goal. And you tell yourself, "Oh, if I just tried harder, I could do it." Because it's easier to do that than to try really hard and not meet your goal, which makes you feel, if you feel like a failure, makes you feel terrible about yourself. So if fear of failure is keeping you stuck, then confront the idea that you are a failure if you fail. Learn to consider yourself a person who has tried and failed, not a failure as a person. And be sure to congratulate yourself for having the courage to tackle a difficult challenge. So Here's some food for thought regarding fear of failure. What were the messages that you got about success and failure when you were growing up? What do you think failure says about you? And how do you support yourself in difficult times? When times are tough, what do you tell yourself? And what do you tell other people? Because often we treat other people as we want to be treated. We treat other people so nicely, so compassionate and understanding and supportive, and then we treat ourselves with contempt and disdain and hostility. So wouldn't it be nice if you could treat yourself the way you treat other people? So if you don't address these underlying reasons for sabotage, the reasons why you're overeating or binging, it's hard to stop. You have to identify and process these underlying fears. Fears of impulsivity, of being an object, fear of happiness, fear of expectation, and fear of failure. Keep in mind, it is what's eating at you that is keeping you stuck. Eating or binging is a way of coping with painful and upsetting emotions and situations. By recognizing what's going on and finding new ways to respond to yourself, you really can make peace with food for good and make peace with yourself. If you'd like to join the conversation, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. You can also tweet me at Win the Diet War. Okay, now I want to get to a question from a listener, DJ, who asks, what are your thoughts on the influence of social media on body image? Well, DJ, like anything, social media has its positive aspects as well as its negative aspects. There really are some positive things about social media. It can connect people. It can help you feel like you're not alone. In fact, there's a huge body positivity movement that actually started on Facebook and turned into the movie Embrace, which is an amazing, awesome movie about body image and the way that we think about ourselves. So in that regard, social media can be good. And it can be bad, because sometimes it looks as if everyone is living a picture-perfect life. So you really have to remember that most people post their highlight reels on Facebook and Instagram. What's the phrase? Don't compare your behind the scenes to someone else's highlight reel. Yeah, okay. Don't compare your behind the scenes to someone else's highlight reel. You're really not seeing the whole picture, so to speak. And that's why I really recommend that you go on a social media and magazine diet. If you take a break from social media, and if you stop reading magazines, then you don't have the influence of all those images. And remember, those images can be filtered, airbrushed, photoshopped, and they really can impact you more than you know. When you take a break from social media and magazines and you stop getting bombarded by a kind of unrealistic, picture-perfect people who don't even look the way they look in real life. They don't look the way they look in magazines and often in social media. You know, you'll be surprised at how much you're affected by it, and you'll also get some more perspective and gain some well-being. I can't underscore this enough, which is why I'm repeating myself. You just don't realize how much impact it is to see pictures of other people's seemingly perfect lives and fun times until you stop looking. Because those images can cause depression, a sense of not being good enough, and that leads to comfort eating. So go on two diets. Get rid of your scale, go on a diet, bathroom scale diet, and go on a social media and magazine diet. That's the only kind of diets that I recommend. You will be happier. Okay, here's another question. This is from Zuleika. I hope I'm pronouncing that the right way. Zuleika says, I'm new to your program last week. Oh, thank you. Welcome, Zuleika. She says, sometimes my eating gets very out of control, and once I start, I have a problem stopping. What is the best way to deal with this kind of eating problem? Well, Zuleika, nearly everyone who seeks my help starts out by telling me they have an eating problem. They say they have a problem with sugar. They think they have a problem with carbs. They all think they have a food problem or an eating problem. And if you're listening to this show, you can probably relate. Either you think you have an eating problem, like Zuleika, or you know someone who does. And the reality is, no matter what's going on with food, you don't have an eating problem. You don't. You really don't. In fact, there's no such thing as an eating problem. Now, lots of people have a problem when it comes to coping with feelings. They have a problem comforting themselves. They have a problem dealing with anger or disappointment or hurt or failure or sadness or, you know, you name it. These are true problems. Eating is not the problem. Eating is actually a temporary solution to the problem, although it is a harmful, damaging, painful, and ultimately horrible solution that causes more harm than good. And that's why it's important to remember that eating for comfort or to numb or distract is a frenemy. It's a friend, and then it does something for you. It comforts you. It soothes you. It helps you cope in some way. But it's also an enemy because it's bad for your self-esteem as well as your body, and it makes you feel terrible about yourself. So, to answer Zuleika's question, the number one way to deal with what you're thinking of as an eating problem is to identify the true problem and work through it. Or to put it another way, you have to figure out what's eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating. Now, this can be tough, especially if you automatically turn to food when you're upset. In fact, you can get so good at doing that, you don't even realize you're feeling something. I described this in, in the first show, someone who thought she was triggered by ice cream and discovered, no, that was not actually what was happening. So just this past week, someone told me, let's call him Jack. Jack said he decided to go on a strict diet to kickstart things. That's the way he put it. He wanted to kickstart his weight loss efforts. So I asked him what motivated him to suddenly want to go on a diet, want to kickstart things. When he, up until then, he had been very on board with the no diet solution. He said, oh, I'm just sick of feeling heavy. I feel so much weight on me. I just can't stand it. So he said he was going hardcore paleo for a couple of months just to kickstart things. I asked Jack what in his life was weighing him down, what was too heavy to think about. And he said, no, nothing. Nothing's going on. And his very next thought, the very next thing he said was, oh, I have to cancel my appointment next week because my parents are coming to visit. The parents are coming. Cue Jaws music. Now, if you don't know Jaws, it's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. And as a result, I never go into the ocean. I have to be in a pool. I have to see what's in there with me. I don't know how I got on that tangent, but there it is. Anyway, when you hear music from the movie Jaws, it's a sign that something really bad is coming. And I think you need a little backstory. So about a year ago, Jack produced his first movie, and he's been feeling really good about that. His father, who's now in his 80s, has produced a lot of movies, a lot of movies. He's produced 45 movies, to be precise. So when Jack made his movie, his father said to him, well, that's good. That's good, Jack. You got your first film under your belt. But Jack, have you produced 45 movies? Ouch! Now you understand the Jaws reference, right? Jack's father was, that was just so biting. And Jack felt completely ripped apart by what he said. But he also understood his father's need to compete with him. He knew it came from his father's own history, his father's relationship to his own brother and to his father, and blah, 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 right? So he understood where it came from. And he also loves his father. So this causes a conflict. Part of him understood, and part of him was really hurt and upset. So his solution to deal with this conflict was to avoid bad feelings about his father by going on a super strict paleo diet, which would switch his focus from his feelings to his food. He was going to switch from feeling bad to thinking about food. So there was, in fact, a lot weighing on Jack. There was Sadness that his father can't see him for who he is. Anger that his father can't see him for who he is, won't see him for who he is. Resentment that his father competes with him. And believe me, he's also not all that happy with his mom, who doesn't say anything. She just kind of stands by and let his dad say whatever he wants, no matter how hurtful. So Jack didn't have a problem with food. He had a problem with disappointment. He had a problem with his relationship to his dad. And when we talked about this and he realized what was going on, he decided to stop focusing on going hardcore paleo and start paying attention to what was weighing on him and really process and deal with this, the disappointments of his relationship with his father, which, by the way, he is going to do with me, not with his father, because it is an exercise in futility to say to his dad, hey, dad, you know, really hurt me when I made my movie, and you basically said, well, you haven't made 45 movies. His dad is not going to hear him or help him or comfort him. His dad is not going to say, son, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry I hurt you. He's just going to feel worse. And that's why dealing with disappointment or relationship issues, sometimes you don't do with the person who's disappointing you because it just leads to more disappointment. But you got to do it. If you'd like to chat with me, give me a call, 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I don't have a call screener, so if you call, you will get me directly. And if you call and I don't pick up, that means I'm on the phone with someone else. So call me back when I'm done with the call, because I really want to talk with you. So, okay. As you can see, there's no such thing as an eating problem. Whatever is going on with food is a symptom of the real problem. So just like with gardening, which is, this is one of my favorite metaphors, which is ironic because I literally cannot keep a plant alive. You don't have to be a gardener to know that if you just pull out a weed, it will grow back. To eliminate the weed permanently, you have to dig out the root. So overeating is the equivalent of a weed. And only by going under the surface to the root of the problem and working through those underlying thoughts, beliefs, and emotions, can you change your relationship to food. So when you identify what you're feeling and develop new ways of soothing yourself and expressing those upset and painful emotions, you stop using food to distract or comfort yourself. And some of you may be familiar with my food mood formula, which correlates certain types of foods with certain types of needs, wants, and emotions. I talked about it on the first day of the show, and I think it's worth repeating. So in case, oh, got a caller. Hold on. Hello, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who's this?
Hello. My name's Alex.
Alex?
Alex.
Alex. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. I just had a question about the fact that when I look in the mirror, I feel like I look way bigger than people tell me I feel like, or people tell me I look like. I feel like I look really fat in the mirror, but then people are always telling me how skinny I am, and I'm just wondering how to make people's like vision of me my own.
That's a great question. So you want to be able to see yourself as people see you, and they seem to have a more realistic view of you. A long time ago, I worked at an eating disorder program, and we had this exercise where we had these giant rolls of paper we put on the wall, and we'd ask people to draw their silhouette, draw their outline, and they always drew them super big. And then we'd have them go stand in the silhouette and someone else would draw their actual outline. And that's what you're talking about, right? You see yourself as big. And by the way, their outline was always much bigger than they were. They saw themselves like you, as if they were big. So sometimes we can have big... Think about our language, you know, weighty. Things are heavy. Things are weighty issues. That's a heavy topic. You know, we actually use words that relate to our bodies or to weight as a way of describing the way we feel. So if you are feeling like there's a little bit of dysmorphia, body dysmorphia, if you're feeling like you're bigger than you are, I wonder if there's anything weighing on you that you are translating into seeing yourself as too big. Like, do you have big feelings about something that have become you as big?
Yeah, I guess that is true. I mean, generally, when I do have those, like, when I do look in the mirror and feel like that, I feel like a lot of the time I'm, like, stressed about something. But then, because there are times where I'm like, yeah, I am really skinny. But then most of the time, I see myself a lot differently. So,
well, when is the last time... Okay, so when is the last time you had the experience of looking in the mirror and just seeing some kind of... It's like the Disneyland fun mirrors, which are not so fun. They make you look all distorted and big. When's the last time that happened?
Yesterday.
Okay, well, good. So it's in your mind. So what was going on yesterday when you looked in the mirror in your life?
I don't know. I guess I'm like, I have a big meeting today that I need to get ready for. So maybe I was a bit stressed out about it, but I don't know. I feel like it wasn't like totally conscious. Like I felt kind of fine, but I do recognize I have things going on.
Well, and it's not conscious. Consciously, you're just thinking, oh my God, I look huge, right? That's consciously. But the unconscious is, oh, I have these huge feelings that I don't want to recognize, but I'm gonna displace them onto my body. I'm going to, right? You're not thinking it, but it's happening. I mean, that's what's that is what the unconscious is. Like, you're not aware of it. It's out of awareness, but not out of operation.
Yeah. So that does make a lot of sense.
So what's your relationship like to... You've mentioned stress a couple of times. What's your relationship like to stress? How do you deal with stress?
I don't really. I probably just internalize it. I don't really. I try to exercise sometimes to help. But I feel like sometimes the exercising is also just a way of trying to make my version of myself in the mirror.
And yeah. Well, it sounds like you're insightful and you're open to thinking about this a different way. But I just want to say one thing about exercise. Exercise is not the way that you get rid of feelings, right? Exercise is the way that you deal with the physical manifestation of those feelings. So if you're stressed or you're upset and you exercise to kind of just calm your body down, that's calming down your body, but it's not dealing with the actual thoughts that are causing the stress.
That's super interesting, because I feel like I do actually, like, when I get stressed out, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to my boxing class, or, like, I'm, you know, like, I feel like I use, like, the physical activity to help me.
Okay, so think about your best friend. Do you have a best friend?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay, what's your best friend's name? Or you can make up a name, it doesn't matter.
It's Rachel.
Rachel. Okay. So if Rachel came to you and said, Alec, I'm really, really stressed. I'm really super upset about something. I'm just so, I'm so stressed. Would you say, okay, look, let's go to the gym?
No.
Okay. I thought not. What would you say?
I'd say, like, let's talk to me. Like, I'm here for you. Like, try to get her to talk to me about it.
Okay, and say that she said that she had a really big meeting and she was super anxious and excited and just, what's going on? What would you say to her? To acknowledge
her? I would just
her.
Encourage her, like, you're going to do awesome, like, don't worry, you know, you're going to kill it.
Okay, so that is exactly how you need to start talking to yourself. So for you, looking in the mirror and going, oh, I'm so big, is kind of like a clue that you're having some kind of a big feeling, some kind of stressor, and you need to respond directly to that. And,
yeah.
How you do that is you talk to yourself the way you talk to your best friend.
Yeah, I definitely don't do that. So I will, yeah, that's really smart.
Well, I mean, more so it is effective. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, that often we treat our friends in a very different way than we treat ourselves. So you've got to be as supportive and kind and encouraging, and you've got to name it, right? When you're stressed or anything, you have to validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. VARY is my little acronym. So, yeah, I am stressed, and of course I'm stressed. I have a big meeting. So of course I'm stressed. Often people try to deny it, like, "Oh no, I shouldn't be stressed. I'm cool. I'm good. I'm all is well." But it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'm definitely gonna put that into. I'm gonna try to put that next time I look in the mirror.
Okay. Wonderful. Keep me posted. And thanks for calling
in. I'm going to my meeting now.
Okay.
So.
Good luck. It's okay to be stressed. You're going to be great, and you are going to you're going to kill it.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Nina.
Okay. Bye-bye. You. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, okay. This idea of denying our feelings or trying to exorcise them away or just telling ourselves that we shouldn't feel it is really common. And that's why, getting back to just my little recap of the food mood formula, it really helps you identify what is going on. So if you're, if smooth, creamy foods like ice cream are your thing, that's correlated with a need for comfort. So if those are your go-to foods, you may want to think about other ways to comfort yourself besides food, like I was just talking about with Alec, using words, validate, acknowledge, encourage, and reassure. Filling foods like bread, pizza, pasta, muffins, and cake, those are correlated with loneliness and emptiness. So if those are the types of food you turn to, you might want to look at the holes in your life and find a way to fill them in ways other than eating. And the final category is crunchy food, chips, pretzels, anything with a crunch and a bite. Those are correlated with anger. So if chips are your thing, look at who or what in your life is making you angry. Now, there are people who tell me they're not eating because of anything emotional. They tell me they're always hungry. And if you feel hungry all the time, no matter how much you eat, again, there is a reason. Assuming you don't have some kind of bizarre metabolic issue, believe me, there's a reason. Think about the expressions that we use, you know, hungry for love, starving for attention. So the experience of yearning, of wanting or needing more love, more attention, more friendship, more understanding, more money, more security, and so forth, can actually be experienced as physical hunger. Just like I think Alec was, there was something was being expressed as seeing herself as too much because of something internal. She saw herself as, her body as bigger. Big feelings can lead to either seeing yourself as bigger than you are or to actually being hungry all the time. So there really is a mind-body connection, and I'm going to talk more about this in a little bit. So as you can see, your relationship to food can be an expression of what's missing in your life or what you need to attend to and take care of. So if you're hungry all the time and this resonates with you, think about what you're hungry for in your life that isn't food and where in your life you feel deprived. And I have another caller. Hello. Hi, caller. What's your name?
Hi. My name is Dr. Mercer.
Hi, Dr. Mercer.
How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks for calling. How can I help?
Sure. So I'm calling Dr. Nina. Is she available?
This is Dr. Nina. I answer my calls directly.
Look at you. Very talented.
Oh, well, I really have no choice, because when I said to the engineer, who answers the calls, he said, you do. So, here I am.
At least you know it's getting done.
There you go.
So listen, I'm listening into your show, and first of all, I'm so intrigued. Just listening about the correlation between food and emotions, it's making a lot of sense to me.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It explains why I've been eating so much bread. How are you?
How am I?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing really well. I'm inside. It's like 105 outside, so I'm talking to Dr. Mercer. Where are you from? I detect a slight accent.
From Texas.
Go big or go home.
That's the only way to do it.
So when you said that really resonates with you, how so?
Well, listen, you know, we all are dealing with the stresses of life, and we all cope differently. And in coping, most of us do turn to food. And it's so powerful that you would state the correlation between the food and the emotions and how bread and, you know, it's very impressive. How long have you studied that to come to that conclusion?
Well, I've been doing this for a little over 15 years, and I started noticing early on that when people were talking about the certain foods, it was always correlated with certain things. So when they talked about ice cream, it wasn't ice cream they wanted. It was comfort. When they talked about, I ate a whole pizza. I can't believe it. I'm so awful.
Right.
It was always they were dealing with some loneliness in their life. And I started listening for it, and I thought, can this be actually correlated? And in 15 years of anecdotal experience, absolutely. And people tell me that it completely has helped them, and that it fits, and it really helps them understand what's going on inside, because we live in a culture that says, hey, don't feel your feelings. So we learn to tamp them down, but they're there.
Exactly. Well, I think it's brilliant, honestly. You know, for myself, you know, the whole loneliness, I think that to be a multitude of things, just because we're always trying to seek something better in life, and we're trying to find something to get us to that next level of fulfillment, and like I said, it explains the whole bread.
Well, the next step is then feeding yourself some good words and connecting with other people, right?
Absolutely. Well, I also thought it was important that you had expressed how, you know, when we're talking to ourselves, we're very hard on ourselves and so forth. But then whenever we're talking to our best friends, we relate differently. And the effectiveness behind talking to those friends really allow us to help our friend overcome any triumphs and trials that they're facing. So if we can utilize that for ourselves, you know, we can maybe not be as hard on ourselves and allow us to be more effective and prosper.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, right? If only we could do that. If only we could do that, that would be... And that's what I'm here to sort of suggest to people, that there's just a whole different way of being in relationship to yourself, to food, and to the world. Because it's really...
Absolutely.
Your relationship to yourself that is the cornerstone of everything.
So let me ask you, what would you tell somebody if they reach a level in life to where they have achieved so much, but yet it's not good enough? You've reached a level, it's not good enough, now you're seeking the next best thing. What would you do to help that person?
Dr. Mercer, I'm going to answer your question to the best that I can, although we only have a minute left. So could I ask you, if possible, to call back next week as well?
100%.
But just to briefly... say something. I'm almost out of time. I hate to leave you at a cliffhanger, but I will
pick up next week.
Yes,
it.
I will.
We
To be continued. I will absolutely answer that. It's a very, very good question and very interesting, and I look forward to talking with you about that, or to talking absolutely. About it if you're not able to call in. So
well,
thank
listen,
you.
Thank you so much for helping so many people.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for calling in from Texas.
Yes, ma'am. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining me today, everyone. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.